Trader Joe's on Instagram.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loright. Coming up, we're going to talk about some of the big issues from the past week in state and local politics. And then later on in the program, we'll open up the phone lines and take some phone calls from listeners. First, one listener comment about last Friday's program, and the caller is commenting about something about a caller called in to say. Here's a listener comment from last Friday.
My name's John, and I was listening to the show today, Friday, and someone said something like, thank goodness Democrats are getting into office, as if that was going to fix everything. I consider myself a liberal, and I don't think the Dems are a fix for a lot of our issues. Barack Obama kept the drone program going. And if you read The Intercept, which is TheIntercept.com, you can see plenty of headlines in there about things like Democratic senators who are supporting deregulation for Wall Street and similar types of programs. There's a Democrat, I think his name is Lipinski in Chicago, who is, well, just not a good guy if he's supposed to be a Democrat. So, yeah, it'd be nice if there weren't so many Republicans in Congress, but don't fool yourselves by thinking a D after the person's name is a sure bet to fixing things either. You've got to find more progressive parties, or at least individuals in the Democratic Party. Thanks, Rob. Bye.
Well, that was a comment that came in after last Friday's Radioactivity show. This is WMNF in Tampa. We're going to hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night. That's a panel discussion show about state and local politics. And it features four people, usually a Democrat, a Republican, and a couple of journalists or professors. So we're going to hear that show right now. And as you listen to the show, please email us with your comments about the topics. You can email here into the studio at dj@wmnf.org. And here is Florida This Week, a public TV show from last Friday night, featuring a really in-depth discussion about some of the big issues of the past 7 days. Coming up next, high school students turn out in big numbers to call for more protection from gun violence. The NRA sues the state of Florida over the new gun laws passed by the legislature. School superintendents call for a special session of the legislature. They say the 47-cent per student increase in spending is not enough. And the commission that decides what amendments will be on the ballot this fall meets in St. Petersburg. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
WEDU Studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Loray.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are Amy Holyfield is the deputy managing editor for politics and sports and features at the Tampa Bay Times. Adam Goodman is a political consultant and a Republican. Joe Brown is an independent journalist. And Susan Nylon is on the board of the ACLU of Florida and a Democrat. Well, it's great to have you here. Thank you for coming. Well, here in Florida and around the nation on Wednesday, students held a huge walkout against gun violence. Hundreds of thousands of students took part. The demonstrations were some of the biggest by students in decades and extended from Maine to Hawaii as they joined the youth-led surge of activism that was set off by the February 14th massacre at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High in Parkland. Among the targets of their protest, semi-automatic weapons. Politicians who've done nothing about school violence in the 19 years since Columbine and the NRA. So, Susan, by some accounts, a million students nationwide. I don't know if that's been, there's no number that, you know, is official from the National Park Service, so to speak. But this is a pretty big deal when high school students who aren't very active go out and say this is a cause that we believe in.
Correct. It is a very big deal because it's not like high schools haven't been the target of a shooter before, but yet this is the first time that they've been able to organize and are prepared and actually take action on the street. I've never seen any kind of demonstration like this before in our history.
Not since Vietnam.
No, correct.
The young people going out in the streets like this. But where does it go? I mean, I think the question is, you know, can they sustain it? And, you know, we know in the legislature, they didn't get everything they wanted this time around, so... Yeah, the students are in class right now. They're going to get out in June. So how sustainable is it, and how much impact is it likely to have in the November elections?
I think it's interesting. I think it's energizing, not just for this group of people, but millennials and older people, just to see this action. And so I think a lot of people are getting hope from it. I'm not sure what it'll turn to. I mean, these things sort of ebb and flow. And certainly young voters aren't reliable generally in elections.
However, I will say, though, that they're incredibly motivated. And the nice thing about that age group is they don't have any presupposition of what's expected of them. They have certainly a lot of energy, and they don't have to follow the normal protocol of something. So where there may be a concern that some of the seniors that we've seen are now going to go off to college and they'll disperse, there's still going to be an incredible amount of student body left at that high school and inspire a lot of other high schools. I know the ACLU has gotten a lot of calls to start clubs within the high schools to help them, you know, keep their voice being heard. So, and we're certainly going to try to meet their needs.
Well, I'll tell you, my feeling is there's a tipping point, right? There's always a tipping point where something kind of kicks in and things start to move. In this case, I think Parkland was the tipping point. And it reflected a lot of things we don't like about a lot of things that aren't working out there, right? But the fact that these young people came together, who we all should remember are incredibly social media savvy, and were able to foment this kind of movement, and I think it's the beginning of a movement, this quickly, was something that if I'm in Washington looking at the march headed their way on the 24th, I don't want to be there. Not if I'm an elected.
Yeah.
And not if I'm elected really on either side of the fence, because this is a damnation of a process that didn't wake up in time to save those 17 lives, and they think is not yet waking up to the reality that this not only could happen again, but that the country is frustrated with politics and politicians as usual, and they want something done, and to look at these children, to listen and look at these children who are bringing it to the adults and teaching us. They're really the teachers.
Well,
we're the students.
They really awakened the conscience of adults who didn't accomplish anything really since Columbine 19 years ago, and they've become the conscience of America.
And America's cheering for them. I mean, the wonderful thing is these are the people we really want to get behind, as opposed to listening to the political excuses, really from both sides, frankly, about what has not happened. And I think it's refreshing, and I hope this is the beginning of something special.
Well, Florida State Rep did, Elizabeth Porter, a Republican from Lake City, said, well, you know, these kids, they don't make laws.
Oh, yeah.
They don't. You know, what are they going to do next? They're going to ask for a law to ban homework.
They're going to run for office is what they're going to do next.
Yeah, and some of them, some of the 18-year-olds are going to vote. Some of the 17-year-olds and 60 will be voting in the future.
So
that's something to look forward to. In the meantime, I would, instead of marching out of school, I'd practice some active shooter. You know, like when I was growing up, I'm the oldest guy here, I think, we had air raid drills, you know, because of the nuclear threat and all that. Well, active shooter drills might be what we need today.
Joe, isn't the big question how many will sign up to register to vote? How many of those seniors and juniors who are going to become 18 in the next few months, how many of them will sign up to vote and actually vote in November elections?
I'm not counting on it.
A lot of
Democrats are, I don't think so.
Well, I would beg to differ because I have a 19-year-old son who is literally driving from his college campus back home to vote on a school referendum to raise money, and that's the only thing on the ballot. So he has become incredibly active. But there's something charismatic about actually going into the polls, especially for your first time voting. But the point is that you mentioned having school shooting precautionary, I forgot what you called it. But
active shooter drill.
Yeah, active shooter drill, thank you. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas has them and had them not too far from the time of the shooter. Lots of schools are doing it. They're prepared. What's amazing about the students now at Stoneman Douglas, or Douglas Stoneman, is that they are prepared to do exactly what they're doing. They're social advocates. They're not just social media, but they've been trained on how to have a voice, how to become active participants, and how to, you know, become political activists.
Well, I'll tell you, this is one of the few times maybe we'll agree on something, Susan, but I think the real difference here is young people see themselves in this story.
Mm-hmm.
They can see themselves as immediately in the story, and and that's one of the reasons I think, Joe, that they don't turn up and vote generally historically is it seems like it's an adult's game.
Good point.
This has changed. I think they see themselves as leading this particular show, and they want to see it to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Amy, in a lot of ways too, I mean, these kids are getting their feet wet. They're going on TV. They're organizing demonstrations. They're negotiating with superintendents and teachers to take 17 minutes out of school. These are kids that are learning the principles of organizing and politics at a very young age. The potential for them to become, you know, elected officials or, you know, activists in a few years, pretty big.
Absolutely. I mean, like I say, it's a moment of hope to watch this in action. It's something extraordinary that's happening right before our eyes. Out of tragedy, something really monumental is going to come of this.
And Adam mentioned next Saturday, the May 24th rally. You know, if it's big, and we don't know how big it's going to be, but this is the national march, and there's going to be marches all over the Tampa Bay area, all over Florida, and in Washington, D.C. What will you be looking for? What will be the sign that this movement is still red hot, on fire? What will be the sign that it's losing its edge next Saturday?
Well, Washington started to lose its edge and its willpower to do the very things they said they were going to do in terms of gun reform. I think the measure will be how they are the day after.
Yeah, and I would say that this will rival the Women's March, you know, a little over a year ago. I actually attended that, and it was well beyond my expectations. I would imagine that the Students' March is going to be the same, and it's going to be empowered by the same people that were brought to the streets, you know, last January.
All right. Well, the National Rifle Association filed a suit last week in federal court against the state of Florida to try to block a new Florida law just signed by Governor Rick Scott that prohibits gun sales to anyone under 21. The NRA says that's a violation of the constitutional rights of 18-year-olds and that they should have the same rights to buy weapons as do 21-year-olds. The suit was filed just over an hour after Scott signed the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Act into law. The governor, who is an NRA member, said he expected opposition from the gun rights group. All right, so Adam, does this lawsuit have merit?
It may have some merit in the actual courtroom of constitutional law. It has far less merit in the courtroom of public opinion. And right now, the NRA is in danger of reputational freefall that they may not recover from. Their attitude has always been, don't give up an inch because you'll lose a mile.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right now, I think they're losing more than a mile of territory. And when we saw that moment, you know, I can say as a Republican, I saw the moment with Senator Rubio on the CNN town hall debate where the question came directly at him, will you accept NRA money moving forward? Not the $3 million he's already received. Will you be okay with it moving forward? He dodged the question.
Mm-hmm.
He should have said, any support I get from the NRA moving forward, I will donate every single dollar to school safety. Now, if he had done something like that, he could have scored big. And that's what people are looking for. They want the right thing done at the right moment. And this is a chance, even for the NRA, they could have embraced this. They could have actually embraced this and said, we're going to be a part of the solution, as opposed to they put their spokespeople up and say, we're not giving an inch. I think that doesn't fly.
Okay. So you think the NRA negatives now have eclipsed their positives?
If I were a Republican running for office and I were endorsed by the NRA, which used to be a badge of honor to a lot of people, I'm really worried about it today.
Right. Joe, what do you think?
No, I'm going to see how far this goes, because if they can do this on behalf of 18-year-olds, say 18-year-old has a right to own, you know, a firearm, then the liquor industry can go and say, hey, these 18-year-olds have a right to get a drink. You know, that's why I'm anxious to see how far it goes.
Well, and actually, you mentioned constitutional law. There actually hasn't been, there's been no court case that has said that this age group is worthy of constitutional protection. That, you know, there's actual case law that shows that you could look at this age group as being generally immature.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a way to exclude them as not and not infringe on other rights. Mm-hmm. But this, to me, this is about the NRA trying to stand their ground over this law and trying to make sure that nothing goes farther in Washington. I think you saw that happen. You saw a backtrack happen even with the president over concessions he was ready to make, and then a meeting with the NRA turned things around.
All right, Susan, you're in law school.
Yeah.
Could you argue that 18-year-olds are being discriminated here in Florida by raising the age for gun purchases?
Well, sure, I could argue it, but I remember arguing when they raised the drinking age when I was 17 to 21. So, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't appeal to the court of common sense. You know, I thought it was a knee-jerk reaction to begin with, because when you look at all the shooters, they aren't that young. They're young, but they're not that young. You tell a parent that, their child is too young to have a gun. I mean, I just can't
But remember, this doesn't say they can't possess a gun. This
they
says
can't
they
purchase
can't
it.
Purchase
they
a
can't
gun.
Purchase
that's,
it.
A giant, that's a right, giant yeah. thing here.
Correct.
They're not trying to take it away from people who want their guns to mm-hmm. hunt, or the kids that you bring them up in the family. That's not what this is about. It's about maturity and being able to bring the gun into
Adam, I want to ask you a question about branding, because mm-hmm. this week, Phil Levine, who's a Democratic candidate for governor, came out with a press release, and he was commenting about guns, and he said, look, AR-15s are weapons of war. Now, that's a pretty powerful term, weapons of war. How powerful do you think that is? Just, take your Republican hat off. How powerful do you think that is, saying it's not just an AR-15, it's a weapon of war?
It's seen by a majority of Americans as a weapon of war. And you ask, where do you draw the line, Rob? I mean, okay, so you can have an AR-15, but maybe you can't have a bazooka or a surface-to-air missile or a tank. I mean, where do we stop? Common sense says that if a gun can discharge 100 bullets in 30 seconds and cause massive damage, we should do something more than we've done already to say, well, it's just another kind of version of a weapon and it's okay. And when Philip Levine said a weapon of war, he touched the nerve that was touched by the Parkland disaster all over America, and I think that people want something done.
Okay. Well, the annual legislative session ended a few days ago, but already Florida's school superintendents are calling on Governor Scott to hold a special session of the legislature to increase funding for the state's K-12 system. Overall, per-student funding will go up next year, but most of that money is designated to improve school safety and mental health services. That leaves just a tiny amount, 47 cents per student for the next school year, to help pay for the other rising costs. 47 cents does not keep up with inflation, and it makes it harder to cover salary increases, higher retirement benefits, growing energy costs, or any expansion of education programs. Governor Scott declined the request for a special session, and Senate President Joe Negron dismissed the request for more money, saying the legislature this year made an unprecedented investment in education.
Amy, didn't the governor promise that this year would be a big year for education funding?
The governor promised when he ran to be governor that he would set a record level for per pupil spending. That was one of his campaign promises. And he signed the budget today and said it was record funding. Mm-hmm. But when you look at inflation, it is not. Mm-hmm. There's no question that the schools in Florida are starved of funding, and that's been a problem. And I think it's going to be an issue for this governor running a Senate race. At this fork in the road.
So Bill Nelson will be able to beat him up with this issue.
I would think so. I mean, look, you've got superintendents across the state of Florida crying out, asking for some fairness here and a greater look at the distribution of funds. And the governor is here. He's being put in a really tough spot. He's been championing himself as to be bringing all the money to education, right. And yet the record just doesn't show that.
Kurt Browning, who's the school superintendent in Pasco County, was in the Scott administration. He's a Republican. I mean, the superintendents are not a bunch of liberals.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Browning is saying this is 47 cents is not enough.
I work with Kurt Browning. I mean, he's one of the best, by the way, and he's on the front lines. He's on the front lines, and he knows that we don't have what we need. We're 41st in school funding. We're 45th in teachers' pay. I mean, those are two of the reasons why we're not better off in terms of our public education. We got to do more and better. At the same time, but we had something happen this year. We had the Parkland shooting. And so the first and the media thing I think that everyone wanted was to secure the safety of the schools. They had to do that. But now we have to add the second part of the sentence. We want our schools not just to be safe, but successful.
Yeah, I want to say that, you know, the Parkland High School went 2 weeks without paper to be able to use. They didn't have enough money for that, and all of a sudden now we have all this money to be able to dump in our schools for safety. We need safer schools, absolutely, but I think the view of how we spend our money and how we allocate it to the school system is a little skewed in our rationale.
Yeah. Joe, this week, Governor Scott toured the state and did a victory lap and said, look, when the legislative session ended, I brought you a $10 billion tax cut. And he's had tax cuts over and over again. But it's one thing to have tax cuts. It's another thing to fund your schools. Where do you think voters are on this issue? Do they want tax cuts or do they want more funding for schools?
Well, two states that went heavy on tax cuts, Kansas and Louisiana, are in a free fall, you know, fiscally. So, this is what Governor Scott campaigned on, tax cuts. He's of that school that tax cuts, you know, and cutting regulations create jobs or attract jobs. But I tell you what attracts some more skilled workers. And that's why we got to invest in our education. You know, that is because, like, California is a very high tax state. And they have the highest job growth in the nation. Massachusetts is another one. Mm-hmm. They have a very educated workforce. So I think if you want to attract more jobs here, educate the workforce a little better.
All right. Does anybody think that there's going to be a special session? Or do you think the governor and the leaders of the House and Senate are going to stand firm? Nobody thinks there's going to be a special session?
No, but I think you'll continue to hear this talking point because you've got districts across the state struggling with budgets. And now you're talking about even the stuff in this legislation to have to deal with security in schools. It's not just coming from the state government. It's money that has to come out of the districts to help make it possible.
Which puts additional pressure on the school budgets in every county.
It's made certain that education is going to be a huge issue in the fall.
In the fall, all right. Well, the state's Constitution Revision Commission held its final public hearing in St. Petersburg this week.
The powerful CRC has the ability to place issues on the ballot this November. It meets only once every 20 years. Hundreds of people turned out to speak, many wanting more action on guns, such as a ban on assault weapons, to be put before the voters. There were also calls for an expansion of the rights of crime victims, a ban on greyhound racing, and shifting more money from the tobacco settlement to cancer research. The CRC will decide which issues make the ballot when it holds its final meeting in May.
So, Joe, and there were people there that wanted a Bill of Rights for people who are in nursing homes. A lot of people showed up at this meeting in St. Petersburg. Do you think the CRC, when it has its meeting in May, is going to listen back to what happened in St. Pete and all the other meetings around the state?
I hope not. I tell you, there was a good article on the Tampa Bay Times opinion page by, what's his name? I had to write it down so I wouldn't forget it. Major Harding, former Chief Justice of the Florida, and he basically said, let's stop cluttering our Constitution with junk. I mean, and right next to his article was a guy writing about the need for something called the Certificate of Need Program, a program that would guarantee hospitals and patient care and this and that, and all these little things. Everybody's got something they want in the Constitution, but these things are not.
Okay, but does it say that the people don't like the legislature's inaction? There was an article this week in the Times that said that this legislature had accomplished so little compared to other legislatures in the past 20 years.
I know, but these things that they want are regulatory issues that lawmakers take care of.
So Tallahassee needs to pass these laws, address these issues, but they're not.
Okay, then change the legislature.
Yeah, definitely. I would say that you're going to see a lot more constitutional revisions or amendments, shall we say, in the upcoming years because people really feel that the state legislature constantly disappoints and the only way they can actually get action is to take it to the streets and to get these amendments put on the ballot. And I think you're going to see a lot more of them.
Out of fairness, this argument could be used for every state in the country.
Yes.
We are fed up with lack of action across the board in government. And I think constitutional revision efforts like this are just a reflection of that.
All right. So, I mean, could you say, though, that you put an issue like banning semi-automatic weapons or weapons of war, you know, on the ballot? People vote, and then they decide, and then it's settled for a while that, you know, not enough Floridians voted for it, or enough Floridians voted for it that we do ban semi-automatic
weapons. That's never going to happen, though. I mean, this is the makeup of this commission, this 37-member commission, is overwhelmingly Republican. I think there's maybe three Democrats on it. Mm-hmm. Unusually, the head of this commission, Carlos Baruff, you know, in past years that this commission has been held, he's usually a constitutional lawyer who's leading the charge.
Because we're Baruff's talking about a developer from Bradenton, Sarasota.
This is a political. This is a political show. This is not a very well vetted process.
So does the commission unnecessarily get people's hopes up that the people who come, who pack this meeting, might be listened to?
I'm not sure how many people are terribly paying attention to it.
It's a dog and pony show, no doubt. Yeah. I mean, that's usually what happens in a circumstance like this.
Okay, but it's how do you change the legislature? If the legislature is not addressing, you know, the Greyhound issue or the issue of nursing home Bill of Rights, then
it's going to take more movements like Parkland. I mean, think about the attention. I didn't say events, I said movements.
Yes, it's
going to take grassroots voices.
A groundswell
of support to get up there and make noise.
Uh-huh. But does it belong in a constitution?
No.
Banning dog racing doesn't belong in a constitution.
We've agreed on that. But
years ago, we passed Amendment 3, which is the number to a lot of people, but that's where we raised the bar to 60%, so that anything we put into the constitution is going to have to pass a supermajority. That makes it a little bit more likely we'll get more serious things in it. Yeah. Though I must say, out of confession, I was responsible in part for pregnant pigs. And thank God, and the pigs are very happy today.
They're protected by Florida's constitution.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, I think we're learning better on how to do this. We're just becoming more skilled at handling our legislature.
All right. Well, before we go, what other news story should we be paying attention to? And let's start with Amy. Amy, your other big story.
My other big story is the amazing momentum for putting Florida on year-round daylight saving time. It's waiting for the governor's signature, a bill that would ask Congress to allow it. Marco Rubio filed two bills this week that would make it possible, and I just don't think people have thought it through. I mean, do we really want to be up until 2 in the morning watching the Lightning play? Do we not want to be able to watch the end of March Madness? It's unfathomable that we would be on a different time zone than the rest of the East Coast.
I mean, Congress would have to act to make the whole country adhere to daylight savings time, but if it doesn't, we would be the outlier.
The two bills from Rubio, one is just for the state of Florida to do what it wants. One is to turn the whole country over to year round.
All right, let's go to Adam. Your other big story.
What a great weekend it was for Tampa Bay sports last weekend. Sebastian Bourdais, who came out of nowhere to win the St. Pete Grand Prix as a crash in the final turn one, took out the two front runners. I happened to be on turn one. That was exciting. Of course, I ducked when they were crashing. And the second thing was Tiger Woods. Of all these things, Tiger Woods almost winning that tournament, the Valspar tournament, what it says is America roots for the underdog. Even those who used to be the overdog, he's now the underdog, and it's nice to see that he's maybe on the comeback trail.
Yeah, that tournament was a great moment. Joe, your other big story?
Hillsborough County last year surpassed its goal for hotel tax revenue, over $30 million. It's going to only get better. I've always said Hillsborough can never compete with Pinellas, with beaches and stuff, but events can be the real...
Are the Rays going to try to dip into that money?
Yes, that was my second point. Yes, somebody else saying, "Oh, well, this we could use this for a Rays ballpark." Not so fast. That bridge collapsed down there in Miami is a show. If we got extra money, let's use it on the infrastructure.
All right, Susan, your other big story.
So I'm still following the Supreme Court decision on redistricting. It hasn't come out yet. It's been long enough. I'm hoping it'll come out soon, because I think that when the Supreme Court makes that decision, especially with what's written in the opinion, could have an amazing impact on elections.
The big question, where does Justice Kennedy come down on that issue?
He's so unpredictable.
Does he step down, too, after the decision?
Well, and there's a rumor that he is going to be stepping down soon. I called D.C. just to verify it, and it's a big buzz up there. So.
All right. Well, thank you all for a great show. Thanks for watching Florida This Week.
That was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. And my guests on that program were Amy Hollifield, who is the deputy managing editor at the Tampa Bay Times, Joe Brown is an independent journalist. Adam Goodman is a Republican political consultant. And Susan Nylon was the Democrat on that panel. Susan's from Sarasota on the board of the ACLU. So we got an email about the show, about some of the topics on the show. Alan wrote this. He said, why does nobody point out the self-evident? I don't want to detract in the slightest from the student activism, but clearly the reason why politicians and the press are giving the students traction where they felt safe and ignoring the previous massacres is because Florida is the biggest purple state and the Republican Party is pooping in its pants. Now, these are Alan's words I'm reading. And he says, I don't even think the NRA really thinks they can win in court. Even the U.S. Supreme Court's most pro-gun ruling says governments have a right to make reasonable regulations on guns. They're only determined to counterattack to slow reasonable gun regulation. That's Alan's email that came in. Now, some people are emailed about plastics and the discovery of microplastics in bottled water and tap water. Les writes this, I was on an aircraft carrier in the Navy. The 5,000 sailors on board consumed at least 1,000 cans of soda per day. When the planes were not active, a plastic bag full of soda cans was thrown off the aft end of the ship every 30 seconds. It made me sick. You could see a line of bags as far as the eye could see, writes Les, who served in the Navy. And then Steve writes this, I was walking on the beach one day and saw a plastic bag half buried in the surf. I extracted it, intending it to throw it in the trash can on my way home. Next, I found a plastic cup. So that went in the bag and I was off. By the time I got back, the bag was completely filled. It felt so good to do my part. I began taking a bag with me for my beach walks, a simple little habit change. And now I am part of the solution. That's part of Steve's email from out there in St. Petersburg. 813-239-9663. And you can also send your email into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. Thanks to our phone producers, Bill Grace and Frank Knox. And I'm going to play a little bit of sound from the weekend. There were so many interesting panel discussions besides Florida this week on TV this past weekend. But I'm going to play some sound from one of those panel discussions and get your take on it. Reading from the New York Times this morning, the headline is Trump assails Mueller, draws rebukes from Republicans, and I'll read the opening of the New York Times story. President Donald Trump appeared on Sunday to abandon a strategy of deferring to the special counsel examining Russia's interference in the 2016 presidential election, lashing out at what he characterized as a partisan investigation and raising questions about whether he might seek to shut it down. Trump has long suggested that allegations that he or his campaign conspired with Russia to influence the election were a hoax and part of a witch hunt. But until this weekend, he had largely heeded the advice of lawyers who counseled him not to directly attack Robert Mueller, the special counsel, for fear of aggravating prosecutors. Now, as Mueller extends his inquiry with a subpoena to the Trump Organization, evidently in search of business ties with Russia, the president appears to be losing his patience. And some of the evidence of that are the president's tweets from the weekend. I'll just read a few. On Friday, when Andrew McCabe was fired from the FBI, the president tweeted, a great day for the hardworking men and women of the FBI, a great day for democracy. Sanctimonious James Comey was his boss and made McCabe look like a choir boy. He knew all about the lies and the corruption going on at the highest levels of the FBI. And then on Saturday in the morning, President Trump tweeted, as the House Intelligence Committee has concluded, there was no collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign. As many are now finding out, however, there was tremendous leaking, lying, and corruption at the highest levels of the FBI, Justice, and State. And then the president in the afternoon on Saturday tweeted this. He said, the fake news is beside themselves that McCabe was caught, called out, and fired. How many hundreds of thousands of dollars was given to wife's campaign by crooked Hillary friend Terry McAuliffe, who was also under investigation? How many lies, how many leaks? Comey knew it all and much more. So the president is really on a tear. Now, there's several more tweets. I'm not going to read them all, But the president has targeted the investigation, the Mueller probe. And here's a tweet from Saturday evening. The Mueller probe should never have been started in that there was no collusion and there was no crime. It was based on fraudulent activities and a fake dossier paid for by Crooked Hillary and the DNC and improperly used in FISA court for surveillance of my campaign. Witch hunt! Exclamation point in capital letters. All right. So President Trump, and there's more tweets where he's really criticizing the FBI and the Mueller campaign and the former heads of the FBI. So yesterday on one of the TV shows, Kurt Gowdy, who's a conservative Republican, was on CNN. And they were talking about the president's tweets and his response and to the Mueller investigation. Let's listen in on part of that segment from CNN yesterday and get your take on this. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663 from CNN yesterday.
Rant on Mueller over the last 24 hours, along with his personal attorney calling for an end to the investigation, does have a lot of people weighing in. Listen.
To suggest that Mueller should shut down and that all he is looking at is collusion, if you have an innocent client, Mr. Dowd, act like it. Russia attacked our country. Let Special Counsel Mueller figure that out. And if you believe, as we found, there's no evidence of collusion, you should want Special Counsel Mueller to take all the time and have all the independence he needs to do his job.
All right, so John, that is essentially saying take the time. That's the antithesis of what you were just saying before, you know, Representative Gowdy, that people wanted to, you know, be expedient and hurry up. But when you've got Gowdy and others who say it takes time and allow that to happen, is that the message that's received by the president?
No, and I think the challenge is, and that as we see different organizations and what I interviewed, is that, you know, people like Paul Manafort are getting dinged for not registering as a foreign lobbyist, you know, things that don't have direct, not paying their taxes, the things that don't have direct relation.
But
to
it was a wide-ranging probe. I mean, that was already established.
Well, you're right, but I think the point is, if it's about Russian collusion, I think Gowdy's 100% correct. Take your time, do it properly. But if it starts to go beyond the scope of Russian collusion, that's a concern that the president and many others have. So okay. It's one of those delicate balances.
Well, that's John Thomas, who's a conservative political commentator on CNN, saying, yeah, if it's the Russian probe, go for it. But if it's something wider than that, don't. What do you think? Should the Mueller investigation be stopped or should it be allowed to continue? It looks like there is mounting pressure from the Trump camp to try to stop the Mueller investigation. And we heard Kurt Gowdy say, if you have an innocent client, act like it, to President Trump's attorney. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And you can send an email in like Jess did. Jess said this. It's going to come up in just a second as I click it. Maybe it won't. Let's see if we can get it to come up. All right, it's not coming up. We're going to go to Mike, who's in Asheville, North Carolina. Hi, Mike. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Two quick things, Rob. If you don't let me get them both out, I'll just listen to what you have to say. How about these non-disclosure agreements that Trump has been having his staff sign? I don't think this has ever happened before, and you know, what's your take on that? That's going to be question one. And then, as a longtime fan of political cartoons, which is somewhat of a dying art, I suggest anyone who wants to spend 5 or 10 really cool minutes to go to the Daily Beast. It's the front page story. Jim Carrey is an incredible political cartoonist. And
you're talking about the actor Jim Carrey.
The past comedian.
Yeah, the actor, yeah.
I mean, these things are skewering, and they are just scathing. And there's an abstract rendition of Trump that I think is the single best political cartoon of Trump I've seen. And so that's front page in Daily Beast right now.
All right, well, go look for it. I think Jim Carrey's a great actor. All right, 813-239-9663. And Micah asked me about the non-disclosure agreements that the Trump staff is being asked to sign. I read that article over the weekend, and I was really floored at the point where they suggested that if a former staff member discloses things about the Trump White House, that they would be subject to millions of dollars in penalties. Now, I don't have the article in front of me, but that just jumped out. Why would anybody who disclosed what they witnessed at the top of our government be forced to pay a penalty to report about the goings-on in our government? I mean, that didn't make any sense. All right, so Gina writes this. Trump has devoted at least half his time in office railing at anyone involved in the Russia probe. If he is innocent, why is he so hysterical? That's Gina. And let's see, 813-239-9663. You know, my best advice, too, I see somebody who broke up their message into several pieces, and I think the pieces are out of order. So I don't know if when you text in, you might have to keep it under a certain level because some of the texts are breaking up. So it's impossible to read a lot of these texts that have come in. Might be easier to just email us here in the studio, dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Tina in Tampa. Hi, Tina. You're on MNF. What would you like to say?
I just want to talk about where the Mueller investigation is going. I don't think that, for example, if he's investigating, he's got, one order to investigate the extent of the whether Donald Trump was involved in that. But I don't think that he can not investigate if he comes across other crimes. I mean, I don't know if this is a law or if this is a rule, but anybody, not just this guy and this issue, but anybody who's investigating a crime, if it takes them if they find out evidence of other wrongdoing, I don't think that any law enforcement officer can, ignore it. I don't think they can legitimately ignore it by law. And, just because he's taken a lot of time, that doesn't mean he's doing anything other than what the original order was for him to investigate. I think he's just being real careful, making sure that the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, and making sure that maybe there isn't anything else. I don't know why Donald Trump would be so intense and about, oh, he can't do this, he can't do that. Yes, he can, and I think by law he has to. I mean, don't you think? I mean,
I think there is precedent. Yeah, I think there is precedent for this in that the Whitewater investigation expanded to look at a whole lot of things involving the Clintons and Arkansas and the Clintons and the White House. And ultimately, President Clinton was impeached not based on Whitewater, but on, a blue dress. And and having inappropriate sex with an intern. So, and lying about it. The lying was got him into trouble.
That's,
I think, the Whitewater, the Watergate investigation began looking into the break-in at the Democratic National Committee headquarters, and then ultimately was more the charges against President Nixon were about the cover-up and not about the break-in itself.
Yeah, so, I think that is, if you look at Watergate and Clinton, I think it all came down to, not all of it, but I mean, I think the hardest evidence they had was obstruction. And I think, everything that President Trump says and does, in public, it sounds like he's doing everything to just, like, either fire people or discredit them to stop the investigation. I mean, how can anybody with any sense not say he's trying to obstruct? And that in itself is a crime. I think that, the bottom line is, I think that Mueller should take it wherever it goes. I don't see how legally he can't.
All right, Tina, thanks a lot. All right, great to hear from you. Thanks, Tina. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Gary in Dunedin. Hi, Gary, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yeah, hey, I originally was going to talk about what you mentioned during your tape segment, the Nursing Home Bill of Rights, but I'll get to that. But about Trump, it should be obvious to any fair-minded person that he's like if a gangster, like a mafia don, was able to get into the White House and be the president, and then law enforcement, prosecutors, etc., were looking into his many criminal activities, and he's using the power of his office and social media and his allies in Congress to attempt to derail the criminal investigation because he's guilty of many crimes worldwide, and he doesn't want to get caught. It seems to me about it's just about that simple. He acts and sounds like a guilty man, and we know from his past history that he was mobbed up. When he was in New York, he was known to hang out with mobsters. Some of his earliest mentors were mob lawyers. I think he still has mob lawyers on his payroll. What is there to figure out? He's a criminal. He's under scrutiny. He wants to stop law enforcement from looking at him. Now, regarding the Nursing Home Bill of Rights, I first became extremely cynical and disillusioned with the human species when I had my mom, who had Alzheimer's and dementia, couldn't take care of her, in 6 different nursing homes in Pinellas County. And at each one of them, there was abuse, there was neglect, there was terrible treatment of the elderly people, especially the ones that didn't have a relative visiting them every day. And we saw what happened to those elderly people during the hurricane when they were just allowed to die from heat stroke. Our nursing home system in Florida is not regulated properly because the nursing home regulatory state officials are oftentimes in a revolving door in bed relationship with the nursing home corporations. We definitely need a nursing home patients and nursing home relatives of patients Bill of Rights in Florida to prevent the abuse of the most fragile elderly.
All right, Gary, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for your comments. Sorry to hear about your mom's treatment. Jeff in Port Richey says, reaching back 40 years for financials has nothing to do with Russia in the 2016 election. So there's Jeff saying that Mueller should not go back 40 years. I think most of Mueller's investigation is not going back 40 years. That would have put us in the 70s. But I think Mueller's investigation is going back within the past decade or maybe 15 years. A lot of really interesting financial arrangements and alleged financial arrangements with Russian oligarchs. So we don't know what's in the Mueller investigation, really, except based on what indictments he's brought forward. And most of those indictments have been events that have... based on events that have happened in the last 5 or 6 years. So we don't know if he's going back 40 years. So I don't know if Jeff's right on that. But we don't know. We don't know what Mueller has found. And I think the danger is that Trump may stop the investigation and put the kibosh on it. So we never get to see the results of the investigation. I think Trey Gowdy is right. If you are innocent, let the investigation go forward. Let Mueller try to prove this stuff. If he can't prove it, he won't bring indictments and won't issue any sort of damning statement against President Trump, and that would help President Trump. President Trump then could go to the Mueller investigation and say, see, I was not indicted, or see, my business dealings were not brought up as possible crimes. And so I think it's to President Trump's benefit if he lets the investigation go forward. What do you think? 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Nick in St. Pete. Nick, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Well, let me put a lot of your fears, the danger of Trump stopping this investigation. Trump cannot stop this investigation, Rob, so, and you already know that. His mandate was to go after this fake Russian collusion. He's exceeded his mandate. He's now searching for crimes. That's not how our judicial system works. And I got some liberal friends, and I think you're all suffering from Trump delusion syndrome. Peace out.
Okay. Thank you, Nick. Well, what do you think? Is Nick right? Do you think that if you are thinking that President Trump has something to hide, that you're suffering from Trump delusion syndrome? That's our friend Nick from St. Pete. Let's go to Rod in Pinellas Park. Hey, Rod, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yeah, a couple of callers ago, I would have to agree with him that I believe that Donald Trump, by his own admission throughout the last 20, 30 years on talk shows and stuff about him being sideways, I don't think anybody gets any more sideways than Donald Trump. His business dealings, he knows that he's done all kinds of things that, you know, I don't know why he even decided to run for president, knowing that when you are in that position, you're under the spotlight, number one. And if he thinks these reporters are going to be backed off because he has money and he can do this and he can do that, he doesn't realize, I guess, that these media companies could buy and sell him 10 times over, and they want to get at the truth. The other thing I would agree with that guy about is he acts like a guilty person. If there was nothing to find, and most people who are not guilty would say, do what you got to do, I haven't done anything wrong, and you're going to find that out. So just like a couple of your past callers have said, why does he try to derail it at every turn? He's tried to derail it at every turn. And if you're not guilty, why would it matter?
All right, Rod, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Two different views there. Rod not agreeing with Nick. And what do you think? 813-239-9663. Dennis writes this: Florida Veterans for Common Sense will be joining with the students this Saturday in the march to ban the sale of weapons of war to civilians. Such a ban was in place nationally until the Republican Party took over Congress and state legislatures. It's now time to bring it back, writes Dennis from Florida Veterans for Common Sense. Let's go to Danny in Tampa. Hey, Danny, you're on. What would you like to say?
Rob, hey, Rob, I disagree with Nick. I think that I think he is hiding something, and I agree with Trey Gowdy, of all people. Just going to let it go forward. And I think that, you know, Rob, have you ever thought
All right, so Trump's...
Hello?
No, sorry about that. I was going to queue up Trey Gowdy again.
Oh, okay. Rob, have you ever thought about the fact that if he does go down, can you imagine the fact can you ever imagine not hearing the word Donald Trump every day?
You know, we played a speech by David K. Johnston a few Tuesdays ago. Maybe it was last Tuesday that we played it.
Yeah, I remember.
And David said that if Trump is impeached, he's just going to go around the country and make speeches and try to build his movement outside government. So,
yeah,
you know.
And who knows better than David K. Johnson, right? He knows him so
yeah, he's been covering,
you know,
Trump. He has been covering Trump for 40 years.
For 40 years. This is amazing, Rob. This is amazing, you got to admit.
Well, it could be. You know, if I was Nick, you know, Nick is one of our biggest Trump supporters. If I was Nick, I might cheer on the impeachment movement in the hopes that President Trump gets out of office early enough that his health is still intact, and then he can try to go around the country building this nationalist movement that I think Nick is really fond of.
Yeah, I think that would benefit Nick. Hey, Rob, have a great day.
All right, thanks, Danny. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. In just a few minutes, Sean Kinnan will be here with the Midpoint program. And let's go to Emmeline in Tampa. Hi, Emmeline, you're on. What would you like to say? Hi, Emmeline.
Hello?
Hi, you're on.
Hi,
you're live.
Yes. Well, let me tell you something. I'm a young woman, and I'm not like a Trump believer nor Hillary Republican Democrat, but I do think that everyone is, you know, doing a commotion. I think that both parties have to be they have to all be under investigation. One, the Democrat, Hillary, over all the emails that were leaked. I think that everyone's forgetting about what was going on with that issue. And now with Trump and his, you know, derailing and stuff like that, I think that our president should worry more about doing positive things and letting this just continue. Let the investigation continue. If you have nothing to hide, let it, you know, let it be, let it go. And stay out of Twitter. I think that that's more for younger people. We use Twitter to communicate stuff, but our president needs to zip it a little bit more and just let the investigation go. And as well as for Hillary and Podesta and the Pizzagate situation, no one is talking about that. That's a big issue that if you look into it, it's kind of disgusting and sad. Everything that was leaked in those emails. I think that both investigations should continue. We as citizens should have the right to also just speak out and let it be.
All right, Emmalynn, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call. Here's an email from Randy in Palm Harbor. He says, I don't understand these Trump supporters standing up for this guy like he's a close relative. And David writes this, the public record is rife with evidence of Trump's association with shady characters and financial crimes. You've got to be deluded or willfully ignorant not to see grounds for an investigation. That's David, who's in Tampa. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up, 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and I'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Now stay tuned for Sean Canaan and the Midpoint program. Thanks for listening. This is WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg.